G'day everyone and welcome to the Dribble Podcast, your home for basketball in WA with an inside look at the Perth Wildcats, Perth Lynx and WA basketball throughout the 2021-22 seasons. My name is Craig O'Donoghue from the West Australian newspaper and throughout this year I'm being joined by a host of guests to provide you with as much insight and entertainment as your basketball brain can handle. In this episode we are extremely fortunate to have Perth Wildcats big man Matt Hodgson joining us from Hotel Quarantine to discuss what it's been like to not only live with COVID throughout the past week, but to do so with a wife and newborn baby on tour with him. And we'll also speak to Thomas Ajay from Summer Jam ahead of this weekend's street ball tournament in Victoria Park. It was a weekend where WA basketball teams experienced something like a Seinfeld episode. It was a show about nothing. But unlike comedic entertainment that adds a bit of yada 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 and no soup for you, COVID-19 is nothing to be taken lightly. When Kevin White spoke to the Dribble Podcast last Tuesday, some of his teammates were in isolation and none were positive. By Friday, 10 players had COVID, and then that number grew to 13, and one of the cases was this man.
Hodgson gets up and stuffs it. He has Hodgson underneath. He's fouled, and one play coming up. Oh, Hodgson wins it back, and he throws it down.
Matt Hodgson, thank you very much for your time in this challenging situation. Welcome to the Dribble Podcast.
Hey, Craig. Thanks very much for having me on, mate.
Now, the obvious question is, how's your health?
Yes, fine. Now, thankfully, it's been 7 days since I had the positive test and feeling fine now. So very, very thankful for that.
So there aren't many people in WA who have experienced what it's like to actually have COVID. What's it been like from a health perspective? What symptoms did you start with and how did it build throughout the past week?
Yeah, sure. So the first little thing I noticed was like I woke up. I had a little tickle in my throat. So it wasn't anything bad. I had the RAT test, turned it out negative. So that was fine. Went and practiced, did everything like that, no problem. Went to Woolies later that afternoon, just pick up groceries, sent, like mask on, taking all the precautions I could, sanitize, wiped down the trolley, everything like that. And by the time I got back, I was like, man, I'm exhausted. I don't know if it was a massive shock. So I don't know if I'd been there for, you know, up on my feet for an hour and a half or so. And just achy around my hips and stuff. I was saying to Cash, my wife, I was like, man, I'm tired. I think I'm going to have an early night tonight. And by the time bedtime rolled around, it was only about 8 p.m. Well, I was trying to push it out. I just like had the fever, so I was really, really cold. Had body aches and stuff. I was like, okay, like this is a little bit more serious than just a little bit of cold. So went to bed. Basically, all the aches and fever and stuff persisted all the way through the night. Woke up feeling a little bit better, and then that's when I tested positive on the RAT test. So after that sort of subsided, which is sort of 36 hours. Then it was just like cold symptoms and that lasted for 2-3 days after that. And then I've generally been feeling just better and better, back to normal ever since then.
So the fatigue element's really interesting. Like as a professional athlete, you'd normally be full of energy, but it hit you that hard that you were done on that day and ready for bed in an instant.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like I came back home and you know, we'd had a practice day and stuff like that and wasn't anything too intense. So I was like, man, my body's not, it's sort of out of sync with how hard practice was. Because practice wasn't hard at all. So I was trying to foam roll thinking, man, I must be super tight and things like that. And then nothing was releasing. So I was like, ah, okay, something must be going on here.
So you were the first person I actually thought of when we heard that there were positive cases within the team, because you're in the position of having an infant daughter on the tour. Did it freak you out, the thought of, oh my God, I got COVID with a baby next to me?
Yeah, it did. So, because I was, when I was sleeping, I didn't put two and two together at times. And because I had a negative RAT test, I was thinking, okay, it's not COVID, you know, I've probably just got a flu or something of that sort of nature. But, sleeping next to my wife, and obviously, and then the cots next to the bed as well. And then I woke up really early in the morning, probably about 5 a.m. And then I had the RAT test tested negative. Tested positive. And I was like, oh my goodness, have I given this to my wife and kid? Like, so I immediately just moved all my stuff into, thankfully there's a spare bedroom in the place that we're staying at down here, and just prayed to God that nothing happened to either of them. So, very scared to start with. And, thankfully, my wife contracted it, but our daughter managed to avoid it the whole time, which we're really, really thankful for.
So what have you had to do then? If you've got both parents who are positive. How do you handle the parenting side of things? This will happen to someone over here. You would think once Feb 5 happens and we open the border, what do you do when you're both positive with a baby?
So initially, Cash, actually, my wife wasn't actually positive. So she was negative on the test the same day as positive. So we went and got a PCR test that day and she was negative, I was positive. But during that time, like I said, I moved my stuff into the other room. Thankfully, she wasn't sick. She was feeling fine. So she looked after Winter the whole time. I just stayed away from Winter whenever we were in the common area, like the lounge and stuff. I wore a mask. I made sure I didn't touch her. I was sanitizing stuff all the time. Then a day and a half later, when I was starting to feel better, Cash got it. So then she was run down and everything like that. So then picked up all the Winter stuff, moved it into my room. Cash slept pretty much, you know, for a day and a half, 2 days. So then I just looked after Winter pretty much by myself during that time. And we definitely got fortunate in the fact that the peak of my symptoms, Cash was feeling good. And then during the peak of her symptoms, I was starting to be on the mend. So I just took over duties from her and still made sure I was wearing a mask and not giving her kisses or anything like that. So that part saved us.
I always look back to when I've got three kids, and I remember the first one, like when she was a couple of weeks old, I was prodding her at night, like poking her, just to check if she was breathing a few times. And like, there's no manual that teaches you how to be a parent. They tell you how to get the baby out, but there's no manual where they say, this is what you do in the first month. How hard has it been to adjust to being a parent in this situation?
Yeah, it's been a challenge. Like, we were lucky to have a couple of weeks at home with Winter, and obviously coming during the calf injury, so I didn't have to worry about basketball as much because I wasn't able to play or anything like that. So that little period was really nice. It sort of got a little bit of a routine going. I started to understand a little bit more about Win. It has been challenging, man. Like, I can't lie to you. I had to lean on my wife a lot when I've been on the road or traveling or practice and things like that. And when I come back, I try and make sure I can take over for her, let her rest and things like that. But yeah, I mean, when she's crying sometimes and you've changed the diaper, she's not hungry and, you know, she's not tired, you're trying to figure out what's wrong and things like that. I just had to be really patient and try and just work through it.
So your wife Cash is American and your parents are up in Queensland, so you got zero family support whatsoever. Are they planning on coming down from Queensland at any point? Are you able to get that sort of sorted?
Well, yeah, so we initially, my folks were going to come down for a couple of weeks when we got to Tasmania, but obviously with there being more outbreaks and stuff in the team, the league put some more, like, heavy restrictions on NBL players, which I think is obviously good to make sure that we're not sort of out and about in public and things like that. So the only way for my parents to come down would be if they would basically isolate the whole time that they were down in Tassie. And I didn't really want them to just sign themselves up for two weeks of isolation. Because even for us for them to come into our apartment to visit was like a no-no. Like, the only way we're going to be able to catch up with them was if we were to go for a walk outside in a park and maintaining continual motion the whole time. So I didn't see how that was going to be possible. So fortunately, I just told them to cancel it. Just had to sort of just rely on ourselves, and none of our families is actually like my actually no, I'm sorry, none of my families has met Winter, and none of her family's met her yet. So we're looking forward to when they do get a chance to meet her.
So would you have been allowed to go to your family if that initial game that was in Brisbane, in I think it was game two of this tour, would you have been allowed to go and see them then, or at that point was it already locked away that you definitely couldn't see them at all?
Well, you can see them, but you're not like the real word that stays put down by the NBL. But the way to see people is, like I said, if you're meeting outside and you're not sitting down. So basically, if you're going for a walk with someone and you're keeping social distancing, then that's fine because imagining that's their justifications for, you know, lower chance of catching the virus. But anything like going into a cafe or sitting down with someone in an indoor area, things like that, they're deemed that is too high risk of potentially contracting the virus. So if we were to go up to Brisbane, might have just met them in a botanical gardens or something like that, just gone for a stroll and caught up with them. But according to the rules, that would have been the only real way of catching up with them.
How was fatherhood going before all this happened? Was it feeling like comfortable? Were you getting into it all and starting to feel like, yeah, I've got this down pat yet?
Slightly. I mean, I'm pretty good at never really getting too ahead of myself because I understand once you start feeling that way, then life tends to throw you a curveball that you never really asked for. So I was definitely doing my best to avoid that type of thinking. But I did feel a lot more comfortable with her by the end of the second week than I did day one when I saw the pull her out of gash.
Yes, it's a nervous time for anyone. It's suddenly, oh my God, I'm a parent. I have to keep this child alive for the next, you know, 20 odd years before they can go and fend for themselves. Now, I spoke to Scott Morrison on Friday. He mentioned that his biggest fear when the team left WA was that you would end up all in a hotel room in quarantine. It doesn't have a balcony or it doesn't have enough space. What's it been like for you? What sort of room have you got in terms of just being able to and move around a bit and not feel like you're on top of each other all the time?
Yeah, well, the Wildcats have been really, really good about where they place Cash and I. So we're staying at the Salamanca in like markets, basically, and there's a hotel complex there. So they've got most of the other guys like literally across the road from me in the inn, and then I'm across the road in sort of separate apartments. So the great thing about this has been that the room, it's sort of old school built, so the rooms are massive. And so during isolation, Cash and I have never felt like we were super cramped. Like the bedroom's really big, the living area is massive. So it didn't feel like we were just on top of each other the whole time. It felt like we had a lot of space. So I think that definitely made this week of isolation way more bearable.
And what's been your go-to for entertainment to keep yourself sane?
Like Cash and I watched like a bit of TV together, even though we like sat a bit away from each other, like watched Seinfeld at night. And so it's funny when you're doing the intro talk about Seinfeld, like we've been absolutely smashing at our dinners at night. I've watched a lot of film. Of games and things like that from the NBL season, which has been really good. And I've been trying to get into a master's program for psychology. So I've been trying to keep at least somewhat productive and reading a lot because I didn't just want to sit down on the couch and just watch TV for 5-6 hours every day.
A master's in psych, that's you're a smart bloke then, aren't you?
I wouldn't go that far. I'd say I've done... I've just continued down the path, man. I've been really enjoying it. I actually was doing my postgrad, one part of my postgrad last year during the season. I really, really enjoyed it. So I don't mind studying while I'm playing. Obviously, now I just have to sort of factor in how I'm going to do that as well as be a father as well.
Your season's been absolutely chaotic when you think about it. Like, there were the concerns over the knee that you had in the NBL Blitz. Then you got soft tissue injuries in the opening minute of round one. Then you played a few minutes back on New Year's Eve, and you've had this now. Like, how are your frustration levels going from a basketball perspective trying to be a professional athlete when things just aren't going your way?
Yeah, it has been frustrating. It's hard to sort of keep patient because I felt by the end of the Blitz like a – because I signed so late and I was preparing to play in January. So to come in and play in sort of in November, I was like, far out, man. I'm not sort of at the level of conditioning stuff that I need to be right now, but I'm just going to have to suck it up and deal with it. So playing in the Blitz, I knew I wasn't performing great, but I'm just trying to get my rhythm and everything back. And by the last game, I felt, okay, cool, I got there. And then good week of practice and everything like that leading into game one. And then, yeah, game one, obviously, I knew I had a calf strain in the warm-up and I just couldn't believe it. That's why I was like, at least just let me get out there and play for the first minute or so, so I can at least experience what it's like to be on this court. And yeah, rehabbing from that. And then, yeah, like I said, like coming back in against Cairns, not feeling great because I've just been out for a couple of weeks, and then looking forward to getting to Tassie and having some more practice time, and then, yeah, get COVID out for a week. It's definitely been a test of my patience, but... And I, especially after the game against Cairns, I was frustrated because just still feel a little out of rhythm, and I don't feel like I've really given Perth Wildcats anywhere close to what I can actually do. But I've been thankful for them that they've been patient with me, and I'm continuing to be patient. And just thinking that it's a long season, man. It's a long season. Hopefully becoming good when it starts to really matter.
So that frustration, when I think back to the preseason, and I reckon you spent about 8 minutes on court and fouled out in one of the games and cracked someone with one of the greatest footy hip and shoulders during the game that you could absolutely lay. Was that an indication that you just felt like things just weren't working for you at that point and you just needed to get rid of that frustration?
Yeah, it was actually more like a mental preparation sort of before the game. So I'd noticed in the sort of in the couple of games previous, or maybe the one game previous to that one, that sort of my energy and focus was a little down. So I experimented with sort of pumping that up a little bit more before the game. So I did a good job of getting myself mentally prepared to be at the game, give a good effort. But I think I was just over-focused and sort of over-energized. So I was out there, yeah, like I said, almost playing footy instead of playing basketball, you know. So it was good as a learning experience for me. I was like, okay, that's good. I'm able to energize myself, which is really good. But now I'm just going to have to temper that to make sure I don't go over, so because I don't want to foul out in games like that all the time.
That was a great bump. Now, the NBL have announced a revised fixture that has the Wildcats playing Adelaide now on Tuesday, January 18. You were initially playing Illawarra 2 days before that, but that game is no longer taking place. So to try to get you guys in a bit more of a position where you'll be fit and ready to go. What's the attitude of the team when it comes towards playing that next game, and how long people feel like it might take their bodies to recover from COVID?
Well, the week, generally about a week, is what like Josh, our SSC coach, has asked for. And for a few of us, that will be a week. For a few of the guys, there will be a little bit less time than that. But the thing that I've been really impressed with the Wildcats, and one of the things I was looking forward to seeing how they sort of handle adversity, is that no one really complains about stuff. Like, you know, you've got guys like Jesse Nordo, and I mean, Jesse's been around the club for ages. You've got Bryce, who's been around the club for ages. You've got Nordo, and these guys like don't really complain about it. So because they're the leaders in the group, everyone else sort of follows suit. Like if these guys aren't complaining about it and just getting on with it and feeling confident regardless of the preparation time that we're going to be able to have, that sets a precedent for everyone else in the team to be like, okay, well, I guess that's just how it's done here. So everyone sort of falls into line, then mentally they just get ready to go play. So that's what I'm sort of expecting will happen when we all get the team together for practice. There won't really be any excuses, and guys will just do the best of what they can do.
So it's really interesting now when you think back, the team's 5-1 on top of the table, and we're expecting now that the season will become a bit more compacted and there'll be a lot of games thrown together, and that's going to impact teams as they attempt to, you know, avoid injury and manage players. Do you think that the way you've started the year with this winning start is going to be even more important than what it was initially, given the uncertainty of what's going to happen from here?
Yeah, I think banking wins at the start of the season always gives you a great buffer for inevitable, like, downtimes during the season as well. So you don't, I mean, that's why I felt that I was happy as a team that we handled that 5-game home stretch relatively well. I mean, 5-0 would have been fantastic, and obviously very close to that. 4-1's a decent result. And then to get this win against Cairns, obviously, as well. So I think any time you can get well above 500 early in the season, it does give you that beautiful buffer for when things do go wrong. You have something where, you know, we potentially play 6 games in 11 days or something like that. So like you said, it's just become even more important for us, and another nice little advantage for us to have going into what could be a very busy few weeks.
And how are you going to be with your own personal expectations, given, as you said, it's been hard so far and you haven't done a lot of running around for a while now? Do you have to look at it and say, well, I'm not going to be the player that I wanted to be at this point. I'm going to have to wait and think, look at it probably a month down the track in terms of getting the best out of yourself again?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'll be judging myself more based on effort and process goals rather than how I'm actually, you know, what I'm putting up on the scoreboard statistically for the first little bit until I get my rhythm back. And then I think it'd be, like you said, like, you know, 2-3 weeks, depending on how many games we play. And then once it's sort of back in the rhythm, I feel it. And that's when the focus, like, so I'm really able to kick it up a notch. But, I don't think in the first, you know, 2-3 weeks of the season from this, I'm going to be setting the world on fire. But I do think after that, I think I've got a good chance to do so.
Now, for Wildcats fans, while there haven't been games, there has been a little bit going on from a news perspective. Corey Sherville has been ruled out for 6 to 8 weeks after re-aggravating his foot injury, and associate head coach Mike Kelly is now part of the Australian Boomers coaching staff for the World Cup qualifiers under Rob Beveridge, and that will be held in February. I mentioned before that you're meant to play Illawarra this week. That would have reunited you with former teammate Harry Froling, and he was responsible for a very awkward moment between yourself and Bryce Cotton in the pre-season. You and I have spoken about this, but the listeners wouldn't have heard the funny side of the story with the way you explain it. So take them through how you approached him about, was it you or was it Harry who was responsible for injuring his leg last season?
When I talked to Bryce?
Yes.
Yeah. So that was in the because I didn't think anything of it, like I said, and I always knew that it was Harry that had hurt Bryce, because I remember the play and things like that. So I was like, okay, whatever, and copped a little bit of it from Perth fans and things like that last year, like a couple of messages or whatever. I was like, whatever, I don't care what it is. And a few people at the fan day actually came up to me and were like, hey, are you and Bryce okay? I'm like, yeah, we're fine. Like, why would they not think that? And like, oh, well, last year injured him, right? And I would have heard that like 3 or 4 times at the fan day. So I was like, oh, wow, I didn't realize that like people actually believe this. So I was like, man, if I want the ball this year, I better make sure I go square this away with Bryce. So it was in Durham Weights and we had like a little dead period there, and it just went up to him. I was like, hey, mate, by the way, like, that wasn't me that got you last year, right? Like, to cork you or anything like that. Like, I'm pretty sure that was Harry, wasn't it? And then, yeah, thankfully, he was like, yeah, that was Charles. He's like, I remember you cracked me pretty good on a screen. I felt fine, but I remember the hit. And then a couple of possessions later, he's like, that's when Harry cleaned him up on a pick. So I was real thankful that Bryce was sort of on board about it, because I hadn't actually talked to him about it. That was about 2 weeks in of me actually being a Wildcat. But, yeah, got the answer that I wanted, and I'm glad that you actually talked about and ran a story to clear it up a little bit too, because, man, I would have, like I said, I would have got asked that like 4 or 5 times at the fan day, and I was, yeah, took me by surprise.
it's as awkward a moment as you can have walking into a club, I reckon. But it's funny that it happened that way, and it's good that it wasn't you. Now, we have a segment on The Dribble called This or That. You can't sit on the fence, got to give a clear answer. And the question for today is, if you're 2 points down, less than 10 seconds remaining in the game, you've got the final shot as a team, what's the priority? Do you reckon when you're 2 points down, do you go for the win, or do you go for just the surety of overtime and just get a basket? What do you reckon is the most important thing?
I think it depends on your overall record and the team you're playing against. So I would say if you're playing against an average team, then I think you just go for 2, because I think you're mentally able to get them in overtime. If you're playing against a good team, I think you go for the win, because I think that any time, yeah. And again, I'm going to preface that by, it depends on what stage it is during the season, how badly you need a win. So say if we're 11-1, then you're probably going for the win, right? And if you're going in towards the playoffs, it doesn't really matter if you win or lose. You're probably going for the win because you want to reduce the chance of injury, and you want to lower fatigue on everyone's legs and things like that. But I know this is a really sort of, it's almost a fence sitter sort of answer. I'd say it depends. But like I said, if you're playing against a really good team, I'm saying you go for the win. Playing against an average team, I reckon you try and go for overtime.
Shows that it's not simple. Nothing's simple in sport. Every situation changes everything is the main thing there, which gives a good insight to fans about what happens when you guys are trying to work out what to do. I really appreciate your time, Matt. It hasn't been a simple couple of weeks for you. It hasn't been, and it's been a really difficult week for you in general, with both battling COVID and having a young child as well. So I really appreciate you giving us some of your time. Hopefully this gives everybody an insight into what it's been like, and hopefully your body starts to improve and you feel really good on and off the court and can have a extremely successful season. So thank you very much for coming on to The Dribble.
Thanks very much, Greg.
Now, Perth Lynx are also experiencing COVID headaches, but their issues are due to the other teams testing positive as opposed to themselves. The Lynx are living in regional Victoria, which has helped them to avoid the drama and remain healthy. The WNBL wasn't able to play a single game last weekend, but Perth are going to keep the competition alive in round 7. As of right now, the WNBL will have 4 games during round 7, and the Lynx will play in 3 of them. So that Lynx fixture is versus Southside on Wednesday in Ballarat, then versus Canberra on Friday, and that match will be Capitals veteran Kelly Wilson's 400th game after it was delayed last weekend. And then they will play Melbourne on Monday. So a little bit of travel in there for them, but most of the time they will be in Ballarat. The only other game for the round is between Melbourne and Southside on Saturday. Now, we would have loved to have brought you a guest from Lynx for the podcast today and take you inside their camp, but unfortunately, amid all of their mayhem, they haven't been able to organise any interview that we put in many requests, but we were unable to get anything organised for today. Round 7 of the WNBL is Reach Out Round, with an aim to shine a light on mental health and encourage people to reach out in times of need. So if you are feeling in any way like that, you should feel encouraged to look after yourself. Lifeline is available. Reachout.com is also available, and do everything possible to look after yourself. With no games for the Wildcats or Lynx, we obviously don't have any updates to either team's Dribble MVP votes either. So it's been a little bit of a different weekend. Okay, so as of last weekend's AFLW Derby, we are pretty much done with sport in this state until the border opens on February 5. But if you're in Victoria Park on Saturday, there will be live basketball. Yes, Australia's largest streetball tournament, Summer Jam, will take place at McCallum Park from 10 a.m. and $5,000 is up for grabs. Thomas Ajay is the co-founder of Two Way, and they are responsible for bringing the tournament to WA. Thomas, welcome to the Dribble Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Craig. Really appreciate it.
Now, this event has been held in Melbourne since 2011. What's happened to get it over here?
That's correct, yes. So the event was born in Melbourne. We wanted to bring it to WA because we personally feel like there is so much talent, especially when it comes to basketball as well, that is often not shown when it comes to WA. And also all the big events usually, you know, go to the big cities like Melbourne and Sydney, but they often forget about Perth. So we definitely wanted to tell them, look, there's so much talent here. There's so many players, young players, older players ready to play and show their skills. So why not bring it to Perth? It's a great city, great weather, great courts here. So why not?
So the event itself, it's got a full court tournament, 5v5 with cash prizes of $5,000. There's a half court tournament, which will be 3-on-3, more cash prizes. And it says an opportunity to fly to Egypt for their half court world final. And then there's a slam dunk competition as well. What type of players are going to be competing? What sort of talent have we got, and how many teams are going to be involved?
Okay, so total, there is 32 teams competing. This is split between men's 5v5 and then men's and women's 3v3. The level of talent is actually really high because most of the players will be at a NBL 1 level, which is the level just below NBL. So they're all experienced players, almost professional players. Some of them actually used to be professional players. The level is definitely there, both men's and women's. And as you said, yes, the competition is quite amazing, and the prizes are quite big. So for the 5v5, there will be a $5,000 cash prize. And then for the 3v3, the winning teams will get flights and accommodation to Melbourne for the next round of tournament. And then if they win over there, they will get to fly all the way to Egypt for the final.
So it's the plan that the winner from here goes to Melbourne and plays the winner from Melbourne, or is it just that they get to enter that Melbourne tournament?
They get to enter the Melbourne tournament. So the Perth round is the qualifying round, and then the winning teams from here will go on to the Melbourne rounds, and then if they win over there, straight to Egypt.
That'd be pretty epic, going over to Egypt and playing in that sort of a tournament. Like, it's a massive lure, isn't it?
Oh, it's crazy. And Red Bull, you know, has been doing this for a long time. They've been running the 3v3 worldwide, and they always have the finals in different countries. And this year happens to be Egypt, which definitely will be an amazing experience to, you know, get to fly all the way there, play there with teams from all over the world.
And you said a lot of NBL 1 West players involved. When you look back to the history of Summer Jam in Melbourne, the biggest name that actually played there was a very young man called Deng Adel. When he was about 12 or 13, he's gone on to play NBA. So it shows that these players aren't any mugs. You start out as a might be young, but you've always got talent to be able to get involved with these sorts of things. How important is having those types of stories in a competition's history?
Oh man, it's so important. And I feel like it's priceless to have to be able to, you know, bring this talent to a platform where everyone can see them. And even if it's young players that haven't had the experience to play professionally yet, but they know they can do it, you know, tournaments like these where people come and watch you play and it's outside, it's outdoor, it's fun, it's a good experience. It's always a good place to show your skills and, you know, play as best as you can and then hopefully win as well. But regardless of it, it's, you know, a way to put your name on the map, people to see you, and, you know, just show what you have.
Let's talk about the dunking comp. I've had a good look at some of the videos and photos from the Victorian events, and that looks like the real highlight of the weekend where people really get around it. You've got your DJs going wild with their music as well. Like, who's going to be the one that people are rocking up to watch?
So there's actually a few different dunkers. All of them have some amazing dunks. I'm personally really, really excited about it because I know who the dunkers are, and I know what they have in their bag. I don't want to share too much, but I can tell you that some players can jump really high, and they can do some things that most people, I feel, have never seen, especially here in Australia. So, yeah, I just can't wait for it. I feel like everyone would love that.
Did you manage to get anyone in over the border before it locked out totally? Because we've seen players come from interstate and overseas to go to those Melbourne events previously, but it's a bit harder for at the moment. Is it pure West Australians playing in this, or did some people get in early?
It's been very tricky, obviously, with all the COVID rules and changing all the time. So we haven't had anyone from overstate, but I can tell you that personally, I think this is a really good opportunity for players from all across WA to, you know, come together and show what WA has to offer, because there's honestly a lot.
The gods have smiled on you a fair bit, it's fair to say. You've got no COVID restrictions right now. 29 degrees is the forecast at the moment. 5,000 people attended the Victorian event a couple of years ago before COVID struck. So what sort of crowd are you anticipating? How many people do you reckon are going to get down there throughout the day?
And we will have a lot of people down because the interest has been really high. The tickets have actually sold out today, I'm pretty sure. So it will be packed. We have a capacity of 500 at the event inside the basketball court. So that will definitely be full. And then we have the whole area around that with the food trucks and the DJs and drinks for people to enjoy and chill. So it will definitely be a big crowd.
You're going to attract a lot of people who are just walking past as well. I would have thought wanting to have a good look at it, even though, as you said, it's a ticketed event to make sure that registrations are there for COVID and things like that. But these sorts of things tend to build as the day progresses and people see the hype and hear the music and wonder what's going on, don't they?
Definitely. It's always like this. This is what happens every time people walk by, see the music. And also we're in a beautiful spot right next to the river. So people walking by, cycling by, they will definitely see it and hopefully come down and watch.
Streetball is so big in the US. Like it's so different to over here. And Corey Homicide Williams actually used that path to get all the way to the top. And you were part of an event in Wellington Square last year. And there's so many nice outdoor courts now. We've got Elizabeth Quay and Scarborough. The one at South Beach in Freo is on the beach and really next level. Do you see it growing in Australia where streetball is playing outdoors on these street courts is going to become a really big thing as opposed to going indoors and trying to find some pickup games?
Definitely. First off, here the weather is beautiful, so it's hard not to want to play outside just because of that. But also, personally, as a basketball player, you know, I've always loved playing outdoors because it's just a different feeling when you play outdoors with your friends or people that you meet at the courts. It's just a different energy, a different atmosphere, and it's always great. And also, as you said, in the U.S., you know, it's such a huge thing where there's so many professional players that come from a streetball background. In Europe as well, there's so many players that start on the playground and then make it all the way to the big leagues. So I'm sure here in Australia, it's still growing. It's still getting there. But there is so much young talent that, you know, you go around to different courts, see them play. And I feel like some of those young players one day will definitely make it to the league.
You've got some talent yourself, don't you? You're a handy player. Are you going to get out there? I've heard a few things about you. What's your skill level and where you might end up?
Craig, I would love to get out there and play. I've had so much to organize with this event that I feel like I probably won't have time to play. But, you know, I love basketball. I've been playing for a long time. I started when I was 11 or 10 even, and I've been playing ever since. So, yeah, it's definitely a big love that I have for basketball. And also I have a passion for, you know, the whole game, outdoors, indoors, and seeing people play and organizing events like this. You know, it's just amazing for the community, for the city, and for the players as well to get to show what they have.
And you're starting to build a real foothold in the WA basketball market as well, aren't you, with all the other things that you're connected to with Sneakerland and things like that. Like, how important is it to build this brand around the state and get to have contacts within the community so that big-name players can come along and help you out with these sorts of things?
I think it's so important because the bigger it gets, the more reach it has for, you know, all kinds of players, young, old, to come down and come together. And, you know, like creating a culture like this for the city is a great thing because, as I said, there is so much talent that often goes overlooked because there's not many platforms for them to, you know, show what they have. So events like this, you know, Sneakerland, Summer Jam, end of the day is all part of one culture, which is sneakers, basketball, hip-hop. It all comes together, and you know, it's just amazing to be part of it, and we can't wait to see where it goes, you know, in WA and Australia, all over Australia as well.
You normally manage to attract some celebrities down to these sorts of things. Have you jagged anyone to make sure that they're going to come down and show their face?
Yes, there will be a few celebrities there. I don't want to say too many names, but we'll have some AFL guys, some pretty big guys coming down, and there will be scorers for the dunk contest as well, so that will be fun. They'll be there enjoying the games, enjoying the basketball, enjoying the food as well.
there's a big guy who plays for West Coast who tends to turn up at most basketball events, and he's done some dunking once at a Perth Wildcats game and got into a bit of trouble for it. Would the great Nick Natanui be one of the people you're referring to?
Yes, he would. We're definitely not going to get him to dunk. As you said, he got in trouble before, so we'll make sure he stays on the chairs, but yeah, he will hopefully be there.
He's got some talent, doesn't he, old Nick? Like, it's amazing to think what he could have done if he played any sport, really. If he was on a basketball court, he could have done some serious damage to some people.
Oh, man, yeah, definitely. He's crazy. I've seen him jump, and he can definitely get up there. If he was a basketball player, he would have had some serious games.
Well, good luck for the weekend. Thanks for joining us, and we really hope it goes well and it's a huge success. Hopefully the level of play is high, the dunks are fantastic, and the entertainment is also really cool, and this begins what can be something that will build to a really successful event for many years. So, Thomas Ajay, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Craig. Thank you for having me.
And remember, keep logging on to thewest.com.au for all your basketball news and pick up your copy of The West Australian. Thanks to Samantha Rogers for all of her outstanding production work. Thanks to Matt Hodgson and Thomas Ajay for their time. We'll be back next week for another episode of The Dribble Podcast. Woo!